Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Suhan, brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort. Well, Jim, I just watched the Timberwolves on TV last night. It sounded like it was a raucous crowd. Rudy Gobert was asked if it felt like a playoff atmosphere after the game. He said it absolutely did. What did you think? You were there last night.
It was a blast. Yeah. The Wolves crowds have been great this year. The team is not only performing at a very high level, but I like this group of guys. They're very pleasant. They're conversational. Mike Conley is one of the best people you ever meet. They're fun to talk to. They're fun to watch. Very cohesive. So I thought it was another fun game and a really fun season.
No doubt. And again, they come through at the end and some of that clutch time. I guess the Warriors are one of the worst teams in the league at clutch time this year, as I was listening to the guys on TV last night. I was a little concerned. Edwards took kind of an ill-advised three. But then you could see him talking to Conley on the bench right after. And I saw him point at his head. Now, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it almost was like, man, I shouldn't have taken that shot. And he kind of acknowledged it.
Yeah, I think as good as he is, as good as he has been, I think he does have a lot of self-awareness that he is just a young guy trying to figure all this stuff out. He is willing to admit when he makes a mistake. He's very coachable. Conley's on him all the time. Finch is on him all the time. He really does respect, you know, the opinions and the guidance of older players and coaches. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I think you read it right. I think I keep on saying this. He's so young, mm-hmm. and maturity does matter. Maturity doesn't always matter in sports, mm-hmm. but maturity, when you're trying to be a decision maker and a big shot taker, it matters, and he's still figuring that stuff out.
What do you see from the team? How do they look to you without Karl-Anthony Towns? Do they look like a team? Let's say the knee doesn't respond how they hope, and they have to play the postseason without him. Clearly, they're not as good a team, but can they make up for it in other ways?
So far they have. Basically what's happened is Jordan McLaughlin has gotten a lot of the cat minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Naz Reid is playing more minutes. McLaughlin is playing more often. Morris is playing a lot. And so they're making up for his Towns' three-point shooting with Edwards and Conley taking more threes, maybe Jaden McDaniels, certain games taking more threes. They're making up for the loss of size and rebounding by playing a smaller lineup that usually handles the ball better, maybe moves quicker in transition, maybe facilitates more ball movement. Because now they have three true point guards. Mm-hmm. You got J-Mac, you got Morris, and you got Conley. Then you have two guys who can play the point in Anderson and Alexander Walker. Then you have Anthony Edwards, you can do whatever you want. So they're more versatile. They're probably better running. The ball probably moves better. But what you lose without Towns, you lose the high-end potential that here's another guy who could score 30 and win a game by himself.
Yeah. They did hit 21 three-pointers last night, a season high for them. You know, that the ball is really going. You have to hit threes in today's NBA.
No doubt about it. Somebody was telling me that they were looking up box scores, NBA All-Star Game box scores from, like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something, mm-hmm. and, like, the two teams combined went, like, 1-for-4 from three-point line.
Wow.
Now that happens in 3 minutes of an NBA game.
Yeah.
They are so skilled, and the three-point shot is such a big part of the offense now. I thought last night probably the turning point in the game is Nikhil Alexander-Walker in the second half getting hot from three.
Yeah.
You know, that really made up the difference.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I have to admit, Jim, I'm concerned about the Ohtani story.
It just
smells like he's more involved than what it was. It's a fraudster. Apparently these guys were friends going back years. The guy lied about who he was, that he had done other things with certain major league teams. It's not looking very good right now.
No, it looks horrible. I've tried not to jump to any conclusions, mm-hmm. but here's what we know. News broke about illicit gambling, and the people who were being accused started lying.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some bad stuff being hidden right now.
Yep.
You know, I've had some people tell me that Ohtani was betting on games where he ended up not pitching very well, and he bet on the opposition. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the kind of stuff you're starting to look at. You know, that's the kind of stuff Major League Baseball really needs to investigate, because it's right now, it's already a horrific story for Ohtani, for the Dodgers, for Major League Baseball, for international baseball. It's already bad.
Yeah.
If we find out that he was actually fixing games to make money when he was pitching, then this is worse than the Black Sox. Well, it's not worse than the Black Sox scandal, but it would feel worse because it would happen right now with this incredible international superstar in the age of social media and everything, where this story will not die.
And a guy who just signed a contract worth hundreds of millions of dollars. It just doesn't make sense. But what little I know is that you're not going to find an illegal bookmaker, which this was in Southern California, issuing $4.5 million worth of credit to somebody like Ohtani's interpreter. He would do Ohtani. He wouldn't do it to his interpreter.
Exactly. That's where this really smells bad. Yeah. I think we're headed for a terrible story. I think you can, let's put it this way. I think if you imagine the worst possibilities, that those possibilities might be the roadmap we're going to be following while we follow this story.
Oh, gosh. I just hope that's not true. What a joy he is to watch the unicorn.
Yep.
Seriously.
Yeah.
And apparently, those guys are hyper-competitive, and who knows what happened. Well, we'll have to wait and see for a lot of details coming out that we're probably not going to want to hear too much about. Harrison Smith staying with the Vikings. I was glad to see that. They got a restructured deal done for him.
Yes, and it's a deal that's very favorable for the Vikings in terms of salary cap space. He's coming back, and he's doing the team a solid, structuring the deal so they're avoidable years, so spreads out the cap hit. They're going to have, I think they have, salary cap stuff is what I was talking about, is always a little murky, but
sure.
I think they've got about $20 million they can still spend this year.
Mm-hmm.
They might have about $100 million under the cap for next year's team. So if they play all this right, if they get the quarterback they want,
mm-hmm.
And they draft well, they're going to be able to really attract some premier free agents next year.
Yeah.
So this, it's a very uncomfortable position for Vikings fans right now because if Sam Darnold is your only quarterback
mm-hmm.
and Jefferson isn't signed, but there is a path that would take them on a pretty good, there's a path that would put them on a pretty good path.
Yeah, you just have to, I'm just going to trust in the group, Kevin O'Connell in particular, to draft and develop the right quarterback. I mean, there's no reason for us to doubt him. Kirk Cousins was about to have the best season of a long NFL career under Kevin O'Connell. So I think we can feel confident that he'll develop the quarterback if they can find the right guy.
I think that's probably the right way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
History tells us that even smart quarterback coaches and head coaches and GMs swing and miss on quarterbacks.
Yep.
A, because it's hard to pick the right quarterback. B, because sometimes you talk yourself into believing things that aren't true when you need a quarterback. But I think everything is groove for them to draft McCarthy,
mm-hmm.
to develop him at whatever pace they feel comfortable, and for them to have a lot of money to spend to surround him in the future. And if they can get Jefferson's deal done, and Smith's deal helps them with that, then I think we can return to being optimistic. Right now, everything's still up in the air.
Right, yes. I'm just excited to see what happens. It's coming up. The Vikings are going to be, outside of who the Bears take number one, are going to be the talk of the draft coming up toward the end of April. That'll be fun to watch, just from an entertainment standpoint, if nothing else. Is Harrison Smith the Hall of Famer?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked at his case a number of times, and I've talked to some NFL people about it. Not surprisingly, the Vikings people I've talked about it say he's a no-doubt Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
He was exceptional at his peak. He was an impact player. He could do everything all over the field. He made big plays. He was part of a number one defense. And he has longevity on top of all of that. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I'll just add the caveat I always offer for anybody who's considered a borderline Hall of Famer in the NFL: it's really hard to compare a safety in the 2020s to an offensive tackle who played in 1968. I mean, that's what I've been in that room. That's
mm-hmm.
what NFL Hall of Fame voters are dealing with. They're comparing people from different eras at different positions, different statistical profiles. It's really hard to do.
Yeah.
So I think he's a Hall of Famer, but that doesn't guarantee he's going to get in.
Jim, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Live at 5 Sports with Todd and Suhan, brought to you by Prairie's Edge Casino Resort.